Chapter 10. The Mystery of the Endura. Serious pupils in the forecourt of the Rosy Cross who are fully prepared to take leave of the world of dialectics are continually asking themselves, how do we take our first steps on the path of transfiguration? To be able to answer that question clearly, the pupil needs to possess some fundamental knowledge about his own being. He also needs to recognize clearly the insurmountable difference between natural religion or occultism on the one hand, and the mystical and magical transfiguristic path on the other. The difference between occultism and transfigurism lies in the fact that all occult methods aim at acquiring a higher consciousness in the reflection sphere, whereas transfigurism causes a new being to awaken in a world order, which is definitely not situated in the reflection sphere. This fact makes mutual understanding and respect very difficult. When a transfigurist speaks about his philosophy of life and his view of the world, more or less the same difficulties present themselves as those which arose some centuries ago at the beginning of the Renaissance. The intelligentsia of that time still considered the earth to be flat. A few enlightened pioneers taught the existence of a spherical and even of a rotating earth. Such nonsense was considered dangerous, and they were cautioned, threatened, imprisoned, exiled, or burned. The forecourt of the Rosy Cross is always filled both with religious types who no longer find life in their churches bearable, and with occult seekers who crave higher consciousness. It is most painful for them to learn that neither type can be received into the sanctuary. No matter what sort of halo of cultivated goodness such a person may wear, the sanctuary of a transfiguristic spiritual school will be inaccessible to them. This is not a question of rejection or of arrogant presumption on the part of the school, but of the absolute structural unfitness of the candidate. The striving human being of this nature believes he can qualify for the universal life by cultivating goodness in the religious, humanitarian, or occult sense. This is an absolute delusion. By means of that kind of culture, one can only elevate oneself in and prepare oneself for a certain harmonious, albeit transitory, life in the subtler realms of the dialectical world order. That has always been the great difficulty. When a transfigurist offers his treasures to the world, people think they can be understood in terms of nature, religion, or occult science. The result, of course, will always be negative. In dialectical life, it is said, experience is the best teacher. But for the problems you face in a transfiguristic school, ordinary everyday experiences are of little or no value. When you live your life in the ordinary way, and on that basis enter the reflection sphere after death, you will eventually return as a helpless child, with a totally different blood state and, at best, with a tiny spark of remembrance, but without the slightest comparative knowledge regarding the immovable kingdom, and thus with a totally inadequate foundation. That is why Jesus Christ said, "Many are called, but few are chosen." Transfigurism can do the calling, but only you yourself can walk the path of the chosen. The dialectical higher consciousness movements, in addition to calling, can always mislead you with something that is in accordance with your sphere of consciousness. They approach you with the miraculous, with the scientifically irrefutable, and even backed by the authority of an official professorship in parapsychology. But transfigurism is different. It can only call. As soon as a pupil answers this call, walks the path, and tastes the first joys of renewal, he is completely unable to offer adequate proof of this in the dialectical sense. On the one hand, his way of life is seen as the cultivation of goodness, and on the other as arrogant self-glorification, for there are no dialectical equivalents for these values, and if there were, they would certainly not be called transfiguristic. Even so, the call awakens in its hearers an immeasurable longing, for transfigurism aims at a return to the original divine state. And who would not desire such a return? That is why, in the school, you can always find a suitable basis on which to work, a foundation on which you can stand, for it is given to every pupil to practice the science of return. The practice of this science, however, makes heavy demands on the dialectical awareness. The pupil who walks this path leaves behind him everything of this nature, the unseen as well as the seen. But even that is not enough, for in the end he loses even himself. He who is willing to lose his life for my sake shall find it. Dialectically seeking and striving beings know, at the most, self-denial, the total readiness of the I to sacrifice the self for the consolation and blessing of the world. But transfigurism requires the losing of the self, the total nullification of the I personality. It is only from this loss that it is one. Only by this it can the transfiguristic value be expressed. It is Tao. It is the undefinable of the still unborn divine man. It bears nothing more within it of yourself, and yet it must be won by the sacrifice of yourself. That is the essence of the mystery. Hence the question, how does one take the first steps on the true path? You set your foot on the path when you solve for yourself the mystery of losing the self. In that mystery lies the key to the inner science of return. To fathom this mystery, the pupil must understand, fully and completely, the nature of his own consciousness. Its nucleus lies in the serpent fire, in the vital fluid present in the serpent fire system. The head of the consciousness serpent corresponds with the frontal cavity, the tail with the sacral plexus. The sole attribute of the serpent fluid is life, life consciousness. This consciousness animates the personality system and spurs it on to thinking, willing, feeling, and acting. The personality system is twofold. That is to say, there is a crystallized personality and a tenuous personality. The former corresponds with the material sphere, the latter with the reflection sphere. During waking consciousness, both personalities lie concentrically within one another. During sleep, the denser portion is at rest, and life is then conscious and active in the other personality. At death, the two personalities are separated once and for all. The denser one decomposes, while the other continues life in the reflection sphere. In the reflection sphere, dying continues. And this process is something like the action one sees in a slow-motion film. In this way, the tenuous personality also decomposes, until only the consciousness remains, and even that loses the major portion of itself. All that was present in the consciousness as a legacy of the past of the microcosm vanishes. Finally, there remains only the naked soul as a consciousness atom. When the soul is thus completely emptied, reincarnation follows. First, the dense personality is born, and the seed atom of the consciousness, the naked soul, is linked with the borrowed and inherited serpent fire of a new and different human generation, and again in slow motion, over a period of years the second, tenuous personality is born until finally maturity is attained. But long before the state of maturity is reached, the process of dying will already have set in. You will undoubtedly recognize, along with us, the hopelessness of this process. Man lives but to die. That phrase tells the whole story. So you will understand why dialectical man, with his passion for life, has devised a possibility to escape this turning of the wheel. That is why nature, religion, and occultism have come into being. Through the application of one or other of these two systems, a remarkable slowing down of the dying process develops on yonder side. The slow-motion film is further decelerated, albeit by means of the crass exploitation of our fellow creatures. Can you imagine the possibility of a life in dialectics which is not being lived at the expense of our fellow beings? No, you cannot. Did you know that exploitation for the purpose of self-maintenance, in a passion for life, has an increasingly earthbinding karmic effect? If you want to escape from the wheel, you should certainly not attempt to slow it down. Therefore, all nature, religion, and occultism must be left behind once and for all. If you are ready to do this, and have thus liberated yourself from your exploiters, you should ask yourself, is my consciousness a spiritual consciousness? If you are looking for an honest answer to that question, you will encounter a bewildered no. It is possible for a spiritual impulse to struggle for expression in your consciousness, but to equate that consciousness with the spirit is impossible. That is why the Transfigurist says that dialectical man is a living soul, but definitely not a living spirit. You will find this confirmed if you reflect upon the nature, the essence, and the power of what can truly be called spirit. The Bible can provide counsel in this, for it teaches that the spirit is eternal, absolute, omniscient, omnipotent, and divine, and that the consciousness is always subordinate to it. Your consciousness, your serpent fire, has broken away from the universal spirit and from the spirit of your original structure. Hence all your speculations and experimentations, hence all your delusions. In more than one sense, the Lord of the Spirit cannot be found in you any longer. Only a life-craving consciousness animates your system, and in this there remains, at most, a small spark of remembrance of the original bond with the Lord of the Spirit. Your soul consciousness is the meager remnant of a former splendor. You grope about in darkness, no longer possessing any pre-remembrance. You are no longer able to walk in the light, in the sense of the light of the Spirit. Walking in the light signifies complete knowledge and possession of the original life, the possession of a fundamental and structural suitability for this life. Walking in the light is not a negative basking in the light, but a mighty power. Just as a locomotive without a driver rushes to its destruction, so the soul, abandoned by the Spirit, must perish. And yet there is a passion for life expressing itself in the personality. But what kind of a passion and what kind of a personality? Wholly degenerated. If you wish to gather some basic knowledge concerning this, we recommend that you study the works of the philosopher Jacob Bohm. He will teach you how much the personality, detached from the spirit, by means of a speculative misuse of the four ethers which he calls the four tastes, the sour, the bitter, the sharp, and the sweet, has not only crystallized, but at the same time has undergone an organic alteration, a necessary structural mutation. This is the reason why flesh and blood, that is, the dialectical personality, can no longer enter into the original kingdom, even by means of a refined and scientifically applied culture. You must learn to explore this and have the courage to draw the only possible conclusions. When if you do so, you will see the transfiguristic path before you and recognize the simple, sound, and distinct logic of its requirements. The entire path will then be seen as a mirror in which the great secret is reflected. Jacob Bohm says, "The learned of the world have danced around this mystery, seeking the door but never finding it. Does not the clear logic of common sense tell us that the whole degenerated personality must be broken down? Must not the temple of dialectical nature be demolished and an effort made to build a new temple in the manner of the original one? But how can this be done?" We answer these questions with another, "What is maintaining your present temple?" It is your passion for life, your consciousness, your serpent fire system. This life center accompanies, drives, and carries along the dialectical personality that is continually dying and being reborn. Therefore, if you want to be a transfigurist, your serpent fire must first relinquish its passion for life. It must lose itself. It will have to empty itself. Then a different serpent power will descend into the system, and this will not maintain the degenerated system, but break it down, simultaneously building a new temple. This power is the Selnader of Jacob Boehme, as a result of which he says, "The word or the heart of God, standing within the circle of the seven spirits, is as a heart that suddenly fills all things in the microcosmic universe. He who can understand, let him understand. As long as your consciousness fire is not prepared to lose itself, transfiguration remains a fantasy. And that is where so many people make a grave mistake. Let us imagine that the consciousness recognizes its powerlessness, its dependence, its great limitations, and possibly also its sinfulness. Then, in the search for balance, restoration, power, and strength, two reactions are possible: the mystical and the magical. In both cases, the serpent fire, feeling itself imperfect, seeks nourishment, and both cases lead to action. The mystical action leads to a nature religious inclination, and the magical action gives rise to occult behavior. The forces which then sustain the consciousness in both activities, always act in harmony with the serpent fire. They do not belong to the salinator of regeneration, but are the acid, the bitter, the sour, and the sweet of dialectical nature. In this way, the consciousness is not emptied, nor is the I nullified. Rather, it is strengthened in accordance with the effort made. Therefore, seen from the transfiguristic point of view, religion and occultism are your enemies, for they bind you more firmly than ever to the dialectical wheel. They make you into a self-maintainer, and hence an exploiter. Many have made this serious error and are still continuing to make it. They imagine that they are losing their I while they are actually busy maintaining it. May it become clear to you that the emptying of the serpent fire system must take place in quite a different way. Therefore, let us return to our original question. How does one take the first steps on the path of transfiguration? The answer must be, by beginning to empty the serpent fire system. How must that emptying take place? We shall deal with this question in greater detail in the following chapters. As serious pupils of the spiritual school, let us conclude that the mystical and magical reactions of the consciousness fire are not liberating. On the contrary, all who, in this way, cry out, "Lord, Lord," are only deceiving themselves. Only he who does the will of the Father will enter the immovable kingdom. What is the will of the Father? He who is willing to lose his dialectical serpent fire will bring forth again that which is imperishable.